Good to have you here, three and out on this Monday. Kevin, BJ, and Ben, glad you're with us all across the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. Short show today. We've got Braves baseball against the New York Mets. Kind of a crucial point in the season, BJ and Ben, as you got five games in 4 days here with the Mets. Rain-out doubleheader makeup today. So the Braves and Mets will play two today, five in total. Season-defining week here. We'll get to that coming up in just a moment here as we count you down towards the Braves and the Mets this afternoon. But we talked about it last week. Hey, was there a 24-hour countdown, a 48-hour countdown? Well, it's today. Texas and Oklahoma make it official. They have told the Big 12 they will not renew their grants of media rights following expiration in 2025, which in effect means a couple of things. One, they're out. Two, they want to negotiate their own media deal. Or three, they're still out and awaiting an official invite from the SEC, which obviously we all expect to be the next step in this process, is that Greg Sankey will say, hey, Oklahoma and Texas have formally been given an invite, and hey, surprise, surprise, it was 14-0. I don't care what you think Texas A&M said. It was 14-0. They have the invite. Now the question is, will they actually make it to 2025 before they dip? Obviously, there's buyouts and things, but obviously, as you guys know, contracts are out there to be broken. They're broken every single day in the world of sports. Is there a financial point where the buyout is worth it for them to just go ahead and leave? Hey, the fine's $12 million. Fine, we're about to get a check for $70 million. It's okay. How do you think this starts to play out now that this official news has been put out there that they have told the Big 12, hey, at the very least, we're not renewing our deal with you?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, what you ask makes a lot of sense, Kevin. Not only are Oklahoma and Texas leaving, but I think the story there is when, right? Are they going to play through the contract, or are they going to say, we're going to pay whatever it takes to get out in a year, in 2 years? What would the Big 12's response to that be in terms of sustainability? Yes, Texas and Oklahoma are doing something. I don't know that it's a guarantee that both are going to the SEC. I think you're going to see the ACC potentially make a push, the Big Ten potentially make a push. And that's kind of where this gets really interesting and fascinating to me. Isn't just necessarily what Texas and Oklahoma do, but what their moves prompt other teams to do or other conferences to do. You know, you look at the ACC, for example. They have sort of the half relationship with Notre Dame. Does this force the ACC, or does this cause the ACC to look around and say, we better be proactive, we better try to get to 16, we better add Notre Dame and then consider some other options? Same for the Big Ten, same for the Pac-12. Would the Big 12 minus Texas and Oklahoma just dissolve, or would they look at, I don't know, and I'm just throwing out names, would they look at a Houston, a Boise State, and feel like maybe they could try to kind of recreate their image? College football is coming up clearly on another set of conference expansion, conference realignment, and it's going to be a wild ride, no doubt about it.
This is the first time I think Oklahoma and Texas has been in a situation where they don't get to dictate terms, right? The cat was out the bag last week. I mean, when Oklahoma and Texas, the reports came out, they've been dealing with having talked for a year that they want to move on to the SEC. I think it is. I think, like you said, Kevin, I think the next in line is waiting on the invite, for which I would think the SEC is going to take their time. Once we know that you guys are serious about coming over here, we have no rush to invite you guys over here. And it's not like this is new to the SEC. They've already taken two teams from the Big 12. They just haven't made as much noise as people thought. They got Texas A&M. They got Missouri. When they really want it, you know, Texas and Oklahoma, they knew that Texas and Oklahoma wasn't going to get there. Well, what has happened since then? Oklahoma has been the only team from the Big 12 to make the college football playoffs. And what happens? They get the brakes beat off them. It doesn't matter if they got Kyler Murray. It doesn't matter if they got Baker Mayfield. It doesn't matter if they got Jalen Hurts. They get beat. Texas, outside of brand equity, they haven't been the same team since Vince Young left. But do they add to a already the biggest conference in college football? Absolutely. You get the entire state of Oklahoma. You get the biggest brand in the state of Texas. And I think now it's a wait and see type thing. But I mean, Kevin, the BJ, I mean, when you think about these type things, do the SEC does the SEC need any more prestige? No. Are they throwing their weight around? Yes. And they trying to make it so that they have more of a top-heavy conference, even though they had the most teams in college football. The Big 12 only had two. The Big 10, you know, taking nothing away from Penn State and Michigan State, they really only got one. The Pac-12, they can't make the college football playoff. So, and the ACC just has Clemson. So, if you can add more teams to the SEC, so now you got Florida, Georgia, LSU, Texas A&M, Alabama, Auburn, and you now you get that. Now you get to add Oklahoma and Texas. I do think it's going to come down to the quad system, even though it hasn't been made official yet. But whenever they are already putting it out that, look, we're not going to renew anything. I know we got till 2025. I know some reports that came out that said they might leave the Big 12 early. What incentive does the Big – what incentive do Texas and Oklahoma have to stay in the Big 12 when they are the only reason why you watch? They are the only two teams you even know that's in the Big 12. So, yeah, the rich keep getting much richer. Like we said, Kevin, I mean, they bought a bank last week. Now they're just buying the rest of the block this week by adding Oklahoma and Texas.
I mean,
Kevin,
really-
Kevin, let me ask you this real quick because I've heard you say for years – you've kind of felt like there's been some inevitability to this idea of four 16-team super conferences. In your mind, is this the step towards that?
Well, sure. Of course it is. We talked about this a little bit on Friday. Four 16-team super conferences gives you how many teams? I'm going to make you do math. I know
64.
The math.
64.
Gives you 64. How convenient. How big is the NCAA tournament field? How big is the college baseball field? How big is the college softball field? Just everybody makes it, and you'll just reap all the benefits of it. I think what happens with the bigger thing with this is when you think about brands and dollars, how many bigger brands are there out there for the SEC to get? Michigan, Ohio State, USC maybe. I think really this is the precursor to all these top 64 schools basically jumping in together and saying, okay, we pretty much still control all the money. We can put together a format where only we get in, essentially. What's the one missing piece to this whole equation? When you have the top 64 schools, basically with probably 90% of the revenue of college football, what's the next piece that they can do to further distinguish themselves and really make this thing over? Because I think this is where it's headed.
I mean, create their own kind of autonomous championship format.
That's the result of that. But what's the one other thing that they can do if they complete that? We're going to pay our players. The end. We got all the money. We're going to pay our players. They can still go get money on the side if they wish. We'll give them a stipend. Maybe, like Ben said, if you got name, image, likeness out there, maybe even across the board, it doesn't have to be that much where you're going to pay your players. And guess what? At that point, in reality, what do you need the NCAA for? And I think that's where it's going. You say, well, you got to do the college basketball tournament. ESPN puts on half the bowls. Like, literally, they own half the bowl games that are out there or more. ESPN does. They're putting them on. You don't think a television network could step up and say, hey, here's Steve. Steve's in charge of the college basketball tournament that's going to involve all your teams. You work with him. We're going to play it here. Done. Like, you don't think they can figure that out? Of course they can. And so I think this would be the next logical step. If it goes to 16, the ACC will follow and go to 16. The Big Ten probably will, and the Pac-12, just because they're that West Coast base, will probably go to 16. And you'll have the top 64 teams probably at that point say, yeah, we really don't need to do this anymore. We're just going to do it ourselves. We'll have a 64-team kind of body of teams, and we'll put together our own tournaments.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, because Christian has said this a number of times, and I believe this is the correct phraseology, is the Division I football champion per the NCAA is the FCS winner.
That's right.
So you already have a little bit of a separation that people might not even know exists between the FBS champion, the college football playoff champion, and the Division I champion. So, Kevin, I could see it, man.
Well, I mean, the part about it is like, oh, you couldn't do March Madness. That's a billion-dollar deal. You don't think Greg Sankey and some of these conference commissioners could walk into CBS and say, hey, we're about to make the college sports league. I don't know. Just the first thing I came up with in 5 seconds. Work. It does need a lot of work.
We'll
work out. But you don't think they could walk in, the four heads of those conferences, to CBS and say, we want you to put on a 64-team tournament with all of our teams. Well, who of your teams? Well, we're the 64 biggest universities in America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we can figure that out. I mean, end.
If they haven't already discussed that, I mean, the thing about college football that we don't give enough credit for, the only people that are surprised about these things is us. They already had these things in the work. We realize that the 12-team playoff, they've been talking about it. They're putting out stories about it, how guys been meeting, you know, going to certain, you know, bunkers underneath the airport. So don't nobody know them, right? So it's they knew these things were coming. And we love college football because one of our teams are two of the regular season. We know how it ends. Can you beat Alabama? And the answer is probably no. Can you beat Clemson? The answer is probably no. Those are the two teams you got to beat, but it's about the regular season. So if it goes to 64, which it probably will, we're going to still watch. Because then it's going to be your team couldn't make the college football playoff. Then you couldn't make the top 12. Now is your team in the tournament. I mean, how many teams do we remember making to the NCAA tournament? Not many.
Well, no, I mean, but I've said this for a long time when you talk about coaching and things of that nature in college athletics, BJ. What is kind of the benchmark in college baseball and college basketball for keeping your job? It's not winning national championships.
Making
I mean, that
the
certainly
tournament.
Helps. Yeah, did you get in the tournament? Are you getting in the tournament? Are you advancing every so often in the tournament? If you are, you're probably going to keep your job for as long as you want. I think that will be the new benchmark for college football. Can we win a national championship? Maybe. Are we making the tournament? Good. There you go. And again, how quickly does that happen? I don't know. I think the first step, obviously Texas and Oklahoma go to the SEC. I would believe the ACC is already, once that announcement is made, has probably had lengthy discussions with Notre Dame already saying, look, I know y'all like being independent, but look at how this thing's going. Do you want to be the 65th team? Sitting out there, do you want us to kick you out and everything else and get two more teams? And y'all are there as an independent going, but what about us? Well, man, it works for 64. I'm not saying it'd be that way, but I would imagine they're making the pitch to Notre Dame, and then you got to find one more team. Who would that be? Would it be a West Virginia? I don't know. Me personally, if I'm the ACC, I go after Penn State. Why? It's in Pennsylvania, one of the top five producing states for talent. That would give you a Florida presence, a Georgia presence, a Pennsylvania presence. That's three of the top five recruiting states for football and a lot of other sports nationally, locked up within your conference. Two Florida schools, two Pennsylvania schools, and a school there in Atlanta that everybody comes to recruit from a lot anyway. So gives you that presence. Then that makes the Big Ten obviously need to pick up the slack. They would need to add three. Pac-12 would need to add two, and there you have it. And I don't think the Big 12 would exist. It may. It just won't be in any kind of form that would be included in something like this, because any university worth their salt, Oklahoma State, Kansas, they have – Kansas, especially with basketball, have too much brand equity to sit by and say, yeah, we'll just see what happens with the Big 12. They're already making – folks, you've already seen it. Big 12's already reached out to the Big 10 saying, hey, would you like to have us? I mean, these things are going to happen. It's inevitable. I don't think – the idea that this is just a step and everybody else is going to sit pat and let the SEC do this, that is patently ridiculous.
No, I agree. I think this is going to be a process, and you look ahead and there are so many questions. I mean, the pod system, you have four pod systems potentially in each conference. How do you balance that out with some regional relevancy and also with balance in terms of how good teams generally are? Are rivalries maintained? I mean, I think it's fair to ask the following question, Ben. We've already seen a report that the SEC would at the very least go to 9 conference games. Well, if 9, why not 10? If 10, why not 11? If 11, why not 12? I mean, are we going to see non-conference games become a relic of the past? I mean, I think there are a lot of unknowns, a lot of uncertainties, but I do very much agree with Kevin that this is not a move in a vacuum. This is a move that will be part of a number of moves that change the infrastructure of the sport.
I mean, I do hope the old rivalries are maintained, but you develop new rivalries. I mean, I've only known the SEC to look like this, and in my time I've seen Texas A&M and obviously Missouri get added. That's not the original SEC. You know, Kevin, we had to do this every show. Back in my day, it wasn't no.
I want to say back in my day in early years, there was no South Carolina in there or Arkansas. So, I mean,
when I played, when Miami, when
yeah,
Miami
was early
Miami,
90s, yep.
They weren't even in the ACC. They were in the Big East. So these things are going to change. I just think that we adjust as the times go on. The only people, as Kevin said, who are going to be mad is you, the 65th team. Just like the team that's the maddest in the college football playoff is the 5th team. Now when we go to 12th team, it's going to be the 13th team. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. I just think that college football is evolving in front of our faces. We just got to adjust to it.
Ben, you're looking forward to it until Florida catches Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma in like 3 out of 4 weeks.
Yeah,
then you won't be looking forward to it.
Well, I'm a couple of years away from that. We got Georgia and Alabama this year, and neither one of those is going to go well. So now just come on down, Lincoln Riley. I mean, I'm just saying, and let's face it, you want your team to win it all. But you want your team to have enough brand equity to talk trash. Like, that's what you want. Like and to quote, and to quote Christian Gokel, and who are y'all playing? So I'm just saying, you gotta love it. It's just that now the rich keep getting richer. Penn State, if they come hollering at you, if you want to know what a headliner feels like, you better take your behind there to the ACC. But Clemson will be waiting on you.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this continues to fall out. No doubt, I think this will happen relatively quickly, BJ, because, again, I think there are teams, if I'm in the Big 12, I'm looking around saying, we just lost two of the biggest names we could possibly have. What could you possibly get to – I mean, you're talking about now there's only 10 teams. You need to add four. I don't know that four universities could make up for the loss of those two in that conference. So that's where it gets interesting. And if you're West Virginia, if you're Oklahoma State, maybe even a Baylor right now, you're sitting around going, is this what we want to stay and stick around for? Are we going to try to improve ourselves? Get while the getting's good. I think there may be something to some of that at the end of the day. We've got so much more to get to. The SEC and ACC Media Days last week. Got the preseason picks in both of those conferences. We'll also look ahead to the Braves. Crucial five-game series coming up with the Mets. We'll get to that a little bit later as well. It is 3 and Out on the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. Streaming live, ESPNCoastal.com. Also live on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. We'd love to hear from you on Twitter at Pigskin Radio. That's one of BJ's all-time favorite dudes there, P-Dub, bringing us back. Preseason polls are out for that. We got the media vote in the ACC, fellas. Clemson, number one, surprise, surprise, in the Atlantic. No, only NC State got one vote, and I'm willing to bet that was maybe Dave Doran's cousin or something. who in your right mind is voting for anybody else other than Clemson right now? At least go out and beat him, but NC State 2, Boston College 3, FSU, Wake Forest, Louisville, and Syracuse there. So overwhelmingly Clemson there in the Atlantic. The Coastal Division, everybody got a vote except for Duke to win the Coastal, which probably actually sounds about right given how that division goes. But North Carolina, overwhelming favorite there at 1, Miami 2, Virginia Tech, Pitt, Virginia, Georgia Tech, and Duke. Georgia Tech actually getting the third most votes in the Coastal to go to the ACC championship game with 4. So they edged out Virginia Tech, Pitt, and Virginia in first place votes in that preseason poll. Any surprises there?
Not really. You know, I think the Atlantic is what it is. We all know that. But the Coastal, I think what you saw with the voting is reflective of what we've seen in that division, guys, first and foremost. But also, kind of looking ahead, there aren't that many teams where you look and you say, we should beat them if we bring our B game. I mean, even Georgia Tech, you mentioned
the ACC,
Kevin,
you have to bring your A game.
Well, that's true. Who's near the bottom of the poll. They have 4 first-place votes. And when you talk about guys like Jahmyr Gibbs and Jeff Sims and Tariq Carpenter, you're talking about, and Wanye Thomas, you're talking about some of the best players in the league. So I think Georgia Tech's a team that you better play well against. Virginia won the ACC Coastal a couple of years ago. Bronco Mendenhall's done a really good job there. Pitt and Virginia Tech, to me, are both X factors in that neither one of those teams winning the division would be a surprise, I don't think. Can you get the consistency out of Virginia Tech and Pitt? You know, both of those teams have had stretches over the last couple of years where, you know, you'll beat a North Carolina or Miami and then you'll play somebody out of conference and lose, or you'll play Syracuse and lose. So I think in the Atlantic, listen, we know about Clemson. I do think NC State is a top 20 team, but a first place vote, that's out there. Boston College, I think, will be better than people realize. Keep an eye on Zay Flowers, one of the best receivers in the country. And I think 4, 5, 6, 7 in the ACC Atlantic, you know, probably could go just about either way. But the craziness in the Coastal is what it is. I mean, the ACC Coastal is impossible to pick. It's impossible to figure out. I think North Carolina is a slight favorite over Miami, but would any of us be surprised if Miami's the clear winner? No. So I think this is kind of reflective of just the way the league is. Absolutely.
I mean, surprise, surprise in the Atlantic. Yeah, Clemson is going to be the overwhelming favorite. I mean, I know that DJU is set to go out there and be a star. I mean, people are talking about him and, you know, his – I mean, we got a one-game sample size of him last year. You saw he was able to do, you know, against Notre Dame, who they end up playing in the ACC championship game. North Carolina State, BJ, as you mentioned, is playing a lot better. Only problem is they got to play Clemson. Boston College going to run the football. Mackenzie Milton's going to be about his health. I mean, Louisville, they're not going to win the Atlanta, but could they upset some guys this year, BJ? You know, Miko Cunningham, maybe he can go out there and, supersede expectations. As much as I like North Carolina and Sam Howell, he has a lot of Baker Mayfield in him. And I'm not talking about the good Baker Mayfield. I'm talking about throwing the ball to the other team. Miami will rise and set on the ACL of De'Aaron King, Virginia Tech. You know, they're going to play stifling defense, not as good as Pitt. I'm excited to see second year with them young boys from Georgia Tech. You know, the law office of Gibbs and Sims. I think those guys are going to play a lot better, and Duke is Duke. I mean, Coach Cutcliffe has done a really, really good job, but, I mean, Daniel Jones ain't coming through there, and even if he was, it wouldn't matter that much. So, yeah, it's going to come down to, you know, can Miami keep De'Aaron King healthy and find a way to, you know, to beat UNC to play Clemson in the ACC championship game? But I'm still looking forward. I still love the fact that Duke didn't get one vote. Like, not one. I mean, we know who got the best – well, I don't know if Duke got better grades than them Georgia Tech boys. I don't know. You're going to have to check them, you know, check them grade point averages, Kevin, at the end of the season. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to the ACC this year. It's going to be Clemson and everybody else. I think Sam Howell is, you know, is built for the big times. I think De'Aaron King, if they can keep him healthy, is going to be very, very good. But I think you know, the team picked fourth in the AC, you know, in the ACC Atlantic. I mean, Florida State, it's going to be the curious case, because if Mackenzie Milton can be healthy, they can find a way to keep him protected. BJ, I'm saying, FSU can make some noise this year. Not going to win it, but definitely make some noise.
Well, it's a talented team. We know that. I think in a lot of ways, because you didn't have spring, this is year one for kind of Mike Norvell and his staff. And, you know, reports that the offensive line has shown some improvement during the offseason. You finally have some depth there, I feel like. And that's been the big question for Florida State. But something interesting from ACC media days, guys, that I don't know that we've seen a whole lot of parallels to this around the country in recent years. I think Florida State's going to go with a two-quarterback system. You have Mackenzie Milton, and you probably don't want him to get hit, just given the knee and whatnot. But Jordan Travis did a really nice job last year when there weren't many other options and the offensive line was struggling. He's got great touch on his deep pass. He's fast. This is a guy that can take a snap and go and get you 6, 7, 8 yards. I think he had 7 or 8 rushing touchdowns last year. So can you be consistent with a two-quarterback system? And could that be the reality for Florida State, Ben?
I think you're going to have to experiment with it, because Mackenzie Milton had a career-ending injury, and he battled his way back. When you talk about why UCF is in the national spotlight, well, it was because Mackenzie Milton started that train going, 2 years in a row, you know, without losing the game before that that hard to watch injury. But yeah, BJ, I mean, it could definitely work. And he has a lot to lose, but what does Norvell really have to lose at this point? I mean, you bring over a guy like Mackenzie Milton to be able to try to shore up that offense. As you mentioned, Travis, I mean, he did all he could last year with an offense that just really couldn't find his way. I'm interested to see, because everybody talks about can it works. Well, the only way you're going to know if you go out there and do it, because the last thing you need is Mackenzie Milton getting off the ground, playing and play out. I think Travis is going to definitely help that cause.
Moving over to the SEC, you had the vote last week. Overwhelmingly, Alabama, 130 first-place votes in the West. A&M won, LSU won, Ole Miss won, Arkansas won. Who did that? Arkansas won? Come on. I mean, but anyway, I want some people to have to at least give me a rational explanation for why you do that. But Alabama, overall, I'm surprised maybe just one A&M, one LSU, that maybe somebody said, hey, if they can get him at the right time. But Georgia, 124 first-place votes to 7 for Florida, who was their second. Kentucky with 2. And somebody, again, explain yourself. South Carolina with 1 first-place vote. Like, there's no logical. First-year head coach, losing a bunch. Yeah, they're going to win the East. I hear you.
I mean, Christian went, did Cody put in a ballot? I know Christian went, but did Cody put in a ballot? We got to check on that.
Maybe,
but listen,
maybe Christian farmed out his vote to Cody.
Yeah, in the SEC West, I think Auburn's the X factor, because how do you know what to expect? I mean, a new staff, love the coordinator hires, but Brian Harsin coming in without that SEC experience. Bo Nix, how do you know? How do you know what you're gonna get from him? We know Tank Bigsby's gonna be really good, but everybody we've talked to that covers Auburn says, hey, the offensive line might not be great. You got some turnover at receiver. I think Demetrius Robertson will help. You go over to the defensive side of the ball, really good secondary, but are you going to be able to rush the passer? And again, understand this, because Kevin, you've said this before when making picks. Just because you have Auburn 5th does not mean you think Auburn's going to be bad. The question is, who is Auburn better than? Is Auburn better than Bama? Are they better than A&M? Are they better than LSU? Are they better than Ole Miss, who has the best quarterback in the conference? So it's the reality of the division you play in. I think Auburn's the hardest team to get a feel for, and you have the Auburn history of when expectations are low, they win 9, 10, 11, 12 games. So when I look out west, the biggest question mark for me is Auburn.
Yeah, Bo Nix, they will go as Bo Nix goes, hand the ball off to Tank Bigsby, or even hit him with the check down. I mean, the ball in Tank Bigsby's hand is definitely going to help, but I question those guys, BJ, on the perimeter. As you mentioned, Matt Corral, second year in that Lane Kiffin offense, is only going to get better when he's even more comfortable. I mean, when you go to the East, it's Georgia and everybody else. You know how much I love my Florida Gators? Yes, I do. I do have my Homer shoes on, as I always do, but, I mean, I think the storyline is going to be this. I mean, you know, Bama, you know, got the best team. Georgia got the best team. Neither one of those guys might not have the best quarterbacks in their respective conferences. I'm talking about if Matt Corral is going to be more comfortable in that Lane Kiffin offense, if Emory Jones isn't ready, and he's had 4 years to sit behind Felipe Franks, you know, and Kyle Trask, it's never going to be the time. But Georgia and Alabama, you could put this poll up every year, 3 years before now, maybe 3 years after now. Those guys are going to be the overwhelming favorites, but that's why you play. Good luck beating Bama in the West, even though they don't need to win the conference or the SEC championship game to go to the college football playoff. But everybody in the East is going to have their work cut out for Georgia. They're coming for it all this year.
Again, that was from SEC Media Days last week. Alabama, Georgia, overwhelming favorites. Obviously, now they got to go out and get it done there on the on the field here in 2021. We'll come back. We'll get you set up for Braves and Mets. Huge series. BJ, you say season-defining series coming up. Plus, I have a little fun exercise for you and Ben before we get you to game one of that doubleheader. It's 3 and Out on the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. Great to be here with you on this Monday. Kevin, BJ, and Ben counting you down towards Braves and Mets. Huge series. BJ, you say season-defining series in this five-gamer with New York.
Better with Mueller and Wilson. And I think that's putting a lot of pressure on two guys that haven't been in very many big games, many games period for the Atlanta Braves. I think if you can split today, it sets you up for a chance to make a move the next couple of days. But, I mean, think about this. If you lose four out of five here, you're going to be 9 games back. If you lose three, so this is a situation where you can get closer, yes, with success, but if you don't play your best here, I think you're done in terms of having the East be within reach realistically. I know that it's hard to say that about we're still in July, a series in July, but you have 5 games against a team you're 5 games behind, a team that on paper has more talent than you do, probably has more momentum than you do right now. You've got to win this series. I mean, 6-7 games back even is very difficult with the lack of experience Atlanta has at a couple of spots, starting pitching to name one. You can't trust the bullpen. So I think you have to win this series. This is go time for the Braves.
I mean, has there been a common theme all year for the Braves? Aren't they, and Kevin and BJ, aren't they inching closer to that ever daunting up, you know, 500 record? Every time they get close to getting to 500, everything goes off the rails. But I'm still very proud of this Braves team, regardless of what happens in this series. I mean, obviously, BJ, we've been saying every time it's a big series, you know, it's their most crucial time of the year for the Braves. But they're getting it done. I mean, without their best player, I mean, the pitching has been so-so. I mean, the guys try to go out there and do all they can. But how much easier does it make the decision for the front office if – they lose this series? I mean, obviously it's going to dictate what they do, Kevin, well, in the next 5 games. If they get, what, 3 out of 5, 4 out of 5, 5 out of 5, maybe those phones, maybe they start, you know, well, calling up some of these other franchises.
Well, 5 out of 5 will be a dream, and I think you're a buyer at that point because you're in first place. However, I look at it, and there's a couple of trains of thought. Obviously, there's guys you expect to have back potentially as the season goes on. Travis d'Arnaud, maybe Waskari Noah, so you might get better post-trade deadline. I think if you hold serve, BJ, I don't know if that makes you an extreme buyer, but I don't know if that makes you a seller either. I don't think the Braves are at the point where, like, hey, just get rid of everybody and we'll try to wait till next year. I think you have a good enough nucleus here where Acuna back next season and some other guys, this would be a much better team. But, yeah, I think this maybe helps you figure some things out ahead of Saturday's trade deadline. Am I a buyer? Am I a seller? Am I just going to sit here and stand pat? I kind of think if you're 4 games out, maybe 3 games out, maybe there's a small move you can make, but I don't know if I'm probably not committed all enough to go all the way in on it, but I'm not ready to go full sell mode either. I see if we can tread water here, knowing that Enoa, Travis d'Arnaud, some guys are going to come back that should make my team better just by them coming off of the injured list. So I think that's big for Alex Anthopoulos as far as how things are moving forward. Before we get to it, I did want to get to this, BJ, because it is sometimes doom and gloom around the Braves, and you can't appreciate where you are without knowing where you've been. So I wanted to put you and Ben's brains to the test before we headed into Braves and Mets game one here. So back in 2015, which is not necessarily all that long ago, 6 years ago, July 24th, the Braves obviously rolled out a lineup 6 years ago. I want to task you and Ben as to how many of those nine you can name in the starting lineup from 2015. I tried this with Christian. He got two. I was surprised at the two he got, but he got two. And this, I will just preface it by saying this. This is a lineup that makes you go, "Huh." So, that being said, work together and see if you can figure out. We got like 4 or 5 minutes we got to step aside for Braves baseball. How many of that day's starting nine can you name from July 24th, 2015? This will make you appreciate where the Braves are.
I mean, Ben, I'm guessing that there were some injuries or, you know, some guys in there who maybe weren't everyday starters. But if you want to start at catcher and kind of work around.
Yeah.
I mean, when I start at catcher, and who knows how bad of a guess this will be. AJ Pierzynski?
That is correct. Not one that Christian Gokel got. So you got one right out of the gate. You're off and running.
I think we're going with the same guy first, right? 2015 and Freddie Free?
Yeah, it's got to be Freddie.
Freddie Free.
Incorrect. It was not him. Care to take another guess? He may have been out and just not playing.
That's literally like all I can remember at first base for the Braves in terms of not Freddie Free. My guess would be, Ben, it would be somebody that probably wasn't like a true backup first baseman and that they were a first baseman by trade. Probably somebody that could like play third. I don't know. Troy Gloss. I don't know.
BJ, you were on a very good train of thought there. But that is incorrect.
I don't. If it ain't Freddie Free, I mean, man.
Would you care to hazard another guess or you just want me to reveal?
Mark DeRosa. I don't know.
That is incorrect. Are you done at first?
Yeah.
This is one of your all-time favorite Braves, BJ. I'm surprised you didn't get it. Chris Johnson.
Oh, my God.
See, I'm thinking third base for Chris Johnson.
You're on the right track when you're like, maybe it's a guy that can play third, could play a little first. You are on the right track. All right, go to second base. I know for a fact you will not get this because you could have given me 700 guesses and I wouldn't have gotten this guy starting at second base.
Second base?
Wow. I mean, I was going to say if I'm probably wrong because I was going to say Martin Prado.
That is incorrect.
I don't have second base for the Braves. No.
I mean, this is the starting lineup from July 24th, 2015. Your starting second baseman against the Cardinals was Pedro Siriaco. Yes, that Pedro Siriaco that we all remember.
I would not have gotten that, no.
Yes, you guys are doing fine. You're on pace to still get two, which would tie Christian. All right, move over to shortstop 2015.
Brooks Conrad.
It ain't Brooks?
It's not Brooks.
Oh, my.
Andrelton
Simmons.
Andrelton Simmons. I will give you that, Andrelton Simmons. So you have your two. Now we move on. Who's playing third base 2015 for the Atlanta Braves on July 24th?
All right. Now, my thought would have been Chris Johnson at third. I think they got him from Arizona in a trade, if I'm remembering correctly. But if he was at first, I'm thinking either – because for some reason I keep thinking Prado. Maybe it was Infante. I don't know. Was it Martin Prado at third?
It was not.
When did – I mean, I'm finna say something crazy. When did Chipper retire, BJ?
That wasn't 2005. I mean, it'll probably be Chipper now. No, it wasn't Chipper in 2000.
No, it wasn't Chipper in 2015.
Who was out there at third base?
He wasn't. If he, Terry Pendleton. Jesus, I mean, I don't know.
What was the guess?
2012
is. What
about Yunel Escobar? Yunel Escobar at third.
Yunel Escobar played shortstop, and that is patently incorrect. Juan Uribe was your third baseman.
I mean, who?
He had a lot of notoriety, I think, with the White Sox and some other teams, not necessarily with the Braves.
He played with Colorado, the Rockies for a little bit.
Yeah, I think
too.
He was with them. Well, all right. Your pick, you want to go left field, you want to go right field. Let's just go back. Let's go to left field. Who was your starting left fielder July 24th, 2015.
Justin Upton.
Incorrect.
Oh, my God. It's why.
Any more guesses, BJ? Or
I mean, I, man, 2015, that's when the break, that's the dark ages.
I mean,
that's
this,
when,
this roster so far has got you just feeling great about yourself. But
no, I'm.
All right. Johnny Gomes, who I think played about half a season with the Braves there.
Alison Thopoulos deserves a raise.
Yeah, I mean, it's not where you were. It's not where you were. Yeah. You got to appreciate where you were and know where you're at. Center fielder. I will tell you, the center fielder also hit leadoff this day for the Braves.
I mean, Malik Smith.
Good
Upton,
guess.
Upton.
But good guess, but incorrect. I believe he might still be in the league still. Cameron Maben, your center fielder and batting leadoff. That leaves us with right field 2015 for the Atlanta Braves.
Nick Markakis.
Nicky Cakes. That is correct. You got three of the eight. Now, you already beat, you guys beat Christian. Who was the starting pitcher on this date in on July 24th, 2015 for the Braves?
Julio Teheran.
Good guess, but incorrect. BJ? Starting pitcher.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know, John Burkett. I don't know.
Give you, no, that is patently wrong. But I will give you a million guesses, and you would not guess that Manny Benuelos was your starting pitcher that day. So yes, just six short years ago, the Braves started Cameron Maben, Pedro Siriaco, Nick Markakis, Chris Johnson, Juan Uribe, AJ Pierzynski, Johnny Gomes, Andrelton Simmons, and Manny Benuelos. Appreciate where we're at today, people, as they start.
Who was the cleanup hitter? Who was the power hitter?
It was Chris Johnson, batting fourth. I went right down the order there. Chris Johnson, the guy cleaning up all the action. And we'll see if they can clean it up today against the Mets. Try to claw him back into this lead. Doubleheader coming away here in just a little bit. The first two of a five-game series. Five games. So, again, that's important. You get swept. You're 10 games out of it and really out of it. Important you win at least, I would say, at least three of these against the Mets here over the next 4 days. We will see you tomorrow on a much longer edition of Three and Out. If you missed any portion of today's show, ESPNCoastal.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, go to our YouTube page as well. Conversation will continue offline at Pigskin Radio. See you tomorrow. Braves and Mets are coming up next.